Please join me in 1 Samuel chapter number 25, the very first verse, where it reads, "Now Samuel died, and all Israel assembled and mourned for him, and they buried him in his house at Ramah." I believe this event probably took place in the spring, maybe early summer, of 1018 BC. That would have been during the 19th year of King Saul's reign. The death of Samuel marks the end of an era, because he was the final judge of the period of the judges. He's the man that anointed Saul as the first king of Israel, the type of king they wanted but really didn't need. And he anointed King David, the type of man that was after God's own heart, who is currently on the run from King Saul. So we have this conflict that's going on in the kingdom, and David will be king within a few more months, about a year or so after the death of Samuel. With Samuel gone, I believe King Saul's remaining restraints have come off, and he decides that he's got to track David down and eradicate him, even though he'd made a promise on a previous occasion that he would live and let live, because David had the chance to kill him but didn't do it. Samuel was probably about 80 years old when he passed away. And it is important to know that he is recently deceased for a later story that comes right at the end of King Saul's life. So kind of file it away that Samuel is dead during the last year and a half of King Saul's reign. Let's see what happens next in the divine story. The first verse continues, "Then David rose and went down to the wilderness of Paran." And actually in the Greek Septuagint, it says to the wilderness of Maon. And that makes more sense for the context. The wilderness of Paran is actually about halfway down from the southern end of the Dead Sea toward the northern tip of the Gulf of Aqaba. It was the southern border of Canaan. So I don't think we're talking about that far south. Maon is a place about 10 miles south and a little bit east of Hebron. And that's where all these activities take place, is in that same general vicinity, right on the edge of the hill country of Judea, heading off to the southeast into the wilderness region that is around the perimeter of the Dead Sea or the Salt Sea. So David goes down into that region. Verse 2, "There was a man in Maon, whose business was in Carmel." Now, Carmel is a city just a few miles north of Maon. "The man was very rich. He had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats." So that tells you how rich he is. He's got a lot of these woolly sheep and goats. "He was shearing his sheep in Carmel." Now, that gives us the time of year. Sheep shearing takes place in the later springtime, and it is a time of celebration. In fact, it becomes kind of this big community festival. And even in some places today that they do sheep shearing, they have contests about who can harvest the most wool, who can take the fleece off with the least amount of breaks in the actual fleece. Things of that nature. So it's a big happy time that's going on for this rich man and all of his sheep shearers and their families and the community. Verse number 3. Now, the name of the man was Nabal, and the name of his wife, Abigail. The woman was discerning and beautiful, but the man was harsh and badly behaved. He was a Calebite. Now, that's too bad, because this tells us that Nabal, as bad a man as he is a descendant of the very godly hero of Hebron, Caleb. Remember, one of the first two good spies that went into the Promised Land and said, "We know that God has given us this land. Let's go in and get it." And then later, after a 40-year delay, Caleb was able to chase giants out of Hebron and take that property for himself. So his descendants have kind of spread out around this region that we're looking at right now. And Nabal, the bad guy of this story, is one of them. Now let's get to where David comes into this story. Verse 4. David heard in the wilderness, that's the wilderness of Maon, to the south and east of where we're talking about, that Nabal was shearing his sheep. And David sent 10 young men. David said to the young men, "Go up to Carmel, go to Nabal, greet him in my name, and thus you shall greet him. Peace be to you, peace be to your house, peace be to all that you have. I hear that you have shearers. Now, your shepherds have been with us, and we did them no harm, and they missed nothing all the time they were in Carmel. Ask your young men, they'll tell you. Therefore, let my young men find favor in your eyes, for we've come on a feast day. Please, give whatever you have at hand to your servants and to your son, David." So effectively, what's happening here is David, instead of showing up at the festival as one of those celebrating a good harvest of wool, because he and his men have protected these shepherds and their flocks during the year that came before, he sends messengers saying, "Would you please let us just kind of have a takeaway? We don't want to come in and be a part of the party for obvious reasons. They don't want to interact with communities right now. But they would like to benefit from the protection that they've provided for these fellow Judeans." Now, how does Nabal respond? Verse 9. When David's young men came, they said all this to Nabal in the name of David, and then they waited. And Nabal answered David's servants, "Who is David?" Now, he's being rhetorical and rude here. He knows exactly who David is, because David is the hero of the battle of the Valley of Elah. And he's been one of the hot military leaders in the last decade and a half of the kingdom of King Saul. So he knows exactly who David is. He's being insulting on purpose. So who is David? Who is this son of Jesse? Oh, there are many servants these days who are breaking away from their masters. Apparently, that's a reference to the fact that a lot of Saul's soldiers have quit being on his side. Some of them have actually defected to David. And so he says, yeah, there's a lot of people that are breaking off their former loyalties. Verse 11, "Shall I take my bread and my water and my meat that I've killed for my shearers and give it to men who came from I don't know where?" So David's young men, they came back and they told him everything that Nabal had said. So, totally insulted, And now David has to decide what to do with this message. And let's talk about the community expectations here. In any other circumstance, with a righteous individual, there would have been some acknowledgement that, yes, David's men had provided assistance. So, yes, they should be able to have a little bit of the fruit of the labor of the harvest of the wool. So he has not lived up to the standard of most righteous individuals. Verse number 13. David said to his men, "Every man strap on his sword." And every one of them strapped on his sword. And David also strapped on his sword. And about 400 men went up after David, while 200 remained with the baggage. Now, what's going on here? David is reacting inappropriately. We've got to do an honest evaluation of this. He has had months of negative attitudes directed toward him, where his father-in-law, his king, has been trying to kill him. He's got former associates of his, friends, comrades in arms who are lying about him and who are also trying to track him down to kill him. He is being treated as if he were the worst enemy of the state of Israel that there's ever been. And he's vented some of that. We spent several sessions reading from his Psalms where he was really angry and frustrated and heartbroken about the way that he's been unfairly treated. But he's always pushed that toward God, sung it to God, left it in God's hands. But on this particular day, it just catches him, and he blows up. And he comes to the conclusion, "I am not going to let this guy get away with this insult." And so his intention, which will be expressed in a little bit, is to annihilate Nabal and anyone associated with him. Verse number 14. But one of the young men told Abigail, Nabal's wife, "Behold, David sent messengers out of the wilderness to greet our master, and he railed at them." So this happened before David got the message. So Abigail, almost immediately after the insult takes place, is informed about it. And I want you to pay particular attention to the testimony of this witness to all the events surrounding David's men's protection of the shepherds of Nabal. Verse 15, "Yet the men were very good to us. We suffered no harm. We didn't miss anything when we were in the fields as long as they went with them. They were like a wall to us both by night and by day, all the while that we were keeping the sheep." So this guy's apparently one of the shepherds that David and his men had contact with over the last several months, perhaps all the way back for the last year. And David and his men protected these guys from wild animals, from maybe the wild terrain, maybe marauders, because, you know, sheep stealing was something people did back at that time. And so they haven't lost a thing, he says. And yet Nabal has insulted David and his men. Continuing in verse number 17. "Now therefore know this, consider what you should do, for harm is determined against our master and against all his house, and he is such a worthless man that one cannot speak to him." So this guy also has an honest evaluation of Nabal. He's a bad guy. He is an ungodly man, and he acts the part. And his servants all understand that he's not a fair man. He's all about himself and nobody else. And they feel so free about that opinion that they share that openly with Nabal's wife, Abigail. And she apparently doesn't disagree with it. More than likely, her marriage to him was an arranged marriage. Because remember, he's very wealthy. And so, from an economic standpoint, he would have been quite the catch. But he's not been a good husband. So what does she do? Verse 18. Abigail made haste. She took 200 loaves. That would be like pita breads. And 2 skins of wine. Now, probably sheepskin-sized bags of wine. And 5 sheep already prepared. So she grabs, apparently, some of the sheep that have been skinned out and prepared to be cooked, or might have already been cooked, for the harvesters of the wool for that day. And 5 seahs of parched grain. So a seah is about 7 quarts. So we've got several great big baskets full of parched grain, and 100 clusters of raisins and 200 cakes of figs, and laid them on donkeys. So she's got exactly what David had asked for. A nice takeaway meal for the men of David's army that have protected these sheep herders during the past year. And so she is getting ready to take this herself to make up for the insult. So she said to her young men, "Go on before me. Behold, I come after you." But she did not tell her husband Nabal. So she is doing this all on her own and leaving him to his little festival. Now, how does she know where David's at? Well, she's got a general idea because she knows where the sheep herders have interacted with David. So if she goes in that direction, she is pretty sure to run into one of David's pickets, one of David's guardians, you know, watching the approaches to wherever it is their camp might be. So she's certain that she can make contact with him. And she does appear also to be a godly woman and anticipates that God will help her out. Verse number 20. As she rode on the donkey and came down under cover of the mountain, behold, David and his men came down toward her, and she met them. So somewhere over the top of a hill, she comes down, and here's David coming the opposite direction with his 400 guys, and she makes contact. Now, David had said, "Surely in vain I've guarded all this fellow has in the wilderness, so that nothing was missed of all that belonged to him. He's returned me evil for good. God do so to the enemies of David and more also, if by morning I leave so much as one male of all who belong to him." So David is hot. Now he's inappropriately hot. I mean, he is thinking that he should kill these guys for the insult that they've offered him. That's extreme. That's over the top. But as I said, he's kind of transferring some of the hurt and anger over the way he's been treated and hunted down by Saul and his men for the past few months. Verse number 23. When Abigail saw David, she hurried and got down from the donkey and fell before David on her face and bowed to the ground. So she is showing him great respect. She fell at his feet and said, "On me alone, my lord, be the guilt. Please let your servant speak in your ears and hear the words of your servant." So she says, "I want to take the blame for the bad hospitality. I want to make it right." Verse 25, "Let not my lord regard this worthless fellow, Nabal. For as his name is, so is he. Nabal is his name, and folly is with him." Now, this is where we find out that Nabal actually means fool, or to act like a fool. So it's the idea of a goofy person. He might have got it as a kid, as a little baby boy, because maybe you know, during that time leading up to his naming day, on his circumcision day, he kind of sprawled around and did goofy little things. But here's his own wife bearing testimony. You know what? He is a goof. He is a knobble. He is a fool. And David will later say, a fool has said in his heart, there is no God. So there is a moral quality that is being put to a person who is a fool. They lack a proper, appropriate attitude toward who God is and what God expects. So she says, that's exactly what he is. He is what his name says, a fool. But I, your servant, did not see the young men of my Lord whom you sent. Now then, my Lord, as he who is lives, and as your soul lives, because he who is has restrained you from blood guilt and from saving with your own hand. Now then, let your enemies and those who seek to do evil to my Lord be as Nabal. And now, let this present that your servant has brought to my Lord be given to the young men who follow you, my Lord. Please forgive the trespass of your servant. So she keeps coming back to this idea, put it on me. I didn't realize your servants were in the camp or at the city, because if I'd seen them first, I would have responded appropriately. But my foolish husband, he's the one that saw it. But ignore that. I'm making up for it now. I'm bringing the very things that we feel you should receive out of a thanksgiving heart for the way you treated my servants, the sheep herders. Verse number 28 continues, for he who is will certainly make my Lord a sure house, because my Lord is fighting the battles of he who is, and evil shall not be found in you so long as you live. If men rise up to pursue you and to seek your life, the life of my Lord shall be bound in the bundle of the living in the care of he who is your God. And the lives of your enemies he shall sling out as from the hollow of a sling. Notice how she tied in with the first hero story of David. May all the bad guys go flinging away from you, just like you flung that rock at the giant. Verse 30. And when he who is has done to my Lord according to all the good that he's spoken concerning you, and has appointed you prince over Israel. So the word has got out somewhere that David is to be the next king. Maybe Samuel had released that information at some point before his death, but she is aware of it, that David will be the next king. Verse 31, my Lord shall have no cause of grief or pangs of conscience for having shed blood without cause, or for my Lord taking vengeance himself. And when he who is has dealt well with my Lord, then remember your servant. So she appeals to him. You are God's man. You are God's anointed. You've done God's work. You've done God's battles. Don't blow it now by shedding stupid blood. Yes, this man is a fool. He insulted you. He should have given gracious gifts to you like I'm giving you now. But he's not worth you blowing your relationship with God by murdering him. Let God deal with it. That's effectively what she says. And when that all happens, think about me. David said to Abigail, blessed be he who is, the God of Israel, who sent you this day to meet me. Blessed be your discretion. Blessed be you who have kept me this day from blood guilt and from avenging myself with my own hand. So he acknowledges, you are right. I should not be on my way to kill the guy. That would not be appropriate. Thank God that he sent you to stop me from doing that. Verse 34, for as surely as he who is the God of Israel lives, who has restrained me from hurting you, unless you had hurried and come to meet me. Truly by morning, there had not been left a novel so much as one male. So his intention was to kill them all. And then David received from her hand what she had brought him. And he said to her, "Go up in peace to your house. See, I've obeyed your voice. I've granted your petition." So David turns around and goes back. And God has now got him calmed down through the work of this woman, Abigail. But how does the story finish? Abigail came to Nabal. Behold, he was holding a feast in his house, like a feast of a king. Nabal's heart was merry within him, for he was very drunk. So she told him nothing at all until the morning light. In the morning, when the wine had gone out of Nabal, his wife told him these things. So basically, "You old fool, your insult of David almost got everybody here killed. Because David was on his way here with 400 guys to wipe you and everybody out because of your insult of him, after he'd helped us. And so I saved us by taking him stuff." And the moment he heard these things, it says his heart died within him and he became as a stone. And about 10 days later, he who is struck Nabal and he died. Now, we don't know all the details of this. Something happens to him. Some have suggested he had a stroke, that he might have had a heart attack, some sort of cardiac event, and he dies 10 days later, and everybody attributes it to his insulting of the anointed man of God, David. But we don't know all the ins and outs of that. All we know is Abigail becomes a widow. And that becomes important to the next story that we'll start with tomorrow. And we'll have to kind of deal with some issues revolving around that as well. Have a great rest of the day. See you tomorrow.